is the Rejoicing in the Word podcast, coming to you from the capital region of the Susquehanna Valley. My name is Josh Hamilton, and I'm here today with Pastor Brandon Starnes, and we want to say welcome back to another episode here. Don't forget, you can check us out at facebook.com/rwmin. We'd love for you to message us, share us, like us for your quickest updates that we put out here. There's some verses and quotes that are put out there. And also, follow us there at Facebook. And then the blog. We have Rejoicing in the Word blog. Great resource there for you. svbcpa.org/rwblog. Make sure you check that out if you haven't. And if it's been a while, go back and check it out again. And then also we have our podcast direct link at svbcpa.org/rwpod. And you can find us there. Share us there with your friends, your neighbors, your coworkers, your family members. And it's a great place to find the different links there for all the major podcast platforms that we're on there. Like I said, welcome back. As we continue our study on the government and politics, we want to encourage you to take a moment and listen to previous episodes that have been put out if you have not already. But the title for this episode is A Responsibility of Government.
Yeah, and this is really a second part, as last week we looked at really the biblical accounting of government, all the way from that first government that was ever mentioned, which really was something of, I don't know, maybe a city-state kind of thing that you would look at during the life of Cain. He builded a city, the scripture says, in Genesis chapter 4. And then we looked at the first kingdom that was ever recorded in scripture, and that's Genesis chapter number 10, where you had Nimrod that builded a kingdom, as it were, and it was expansive. And then we looked a little at theocracy that existed during the time of the children of Israel in much of the Old Testament previous to the establishment of the kingdom of Saul and David, etc. And you know, with each of those, it's important to note that it was man, with the exception of the theocracy, man being ruled by man. You know, and there's, you're told early in life that there's a few things you should never talk about with family and guests around Thanksgiving time or what have you. And one of those is religion, and the other one is
politics.
Yes. So, you know, government really drives at the very nature of individuals. It's something that we might like the aspirations of wanting to become, wanting a government that best represents us. But the reality is, deep within our heart, government stands for authority. And as authority, that's something that we all at times struggle with. We want to be our own authority. And so last week we just spent that time looking at these kingdoms that are found in scriptures, what their blessings were, if one sense you want to look at it that way, and what their positives were. And then we kind of did not get to the second part, which was the responsibility. What role biblically is a government supposed to play?
Yeah, I mean, we can go to Romans chapter 13, and we concluded one of our episodes with a verse found in, well, verse 1, "Let every soul be subject unto the higher powers, for there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God." But then as it goes down, we can see, as we're told to be subject to it, but we're also given some responsibilities that government has. One of those is that the government is a restrainer. It's put there to punish evil, and that comes out of verse number 3, "For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the evil. Wilt thou then not be afraid of the power? Do that which is good, and thou shalt have praise of the same." And then going on to verse number 4, "For he is the minister," he being the government there, "he is the minister of God to thee for good. But if thou do that which is evil, be afraid. For he," again it's the government there, "for he beareth not the sword in vain. For he is the minister of God, a revenger to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil." And so we find here that government, one of its responsibilities is to be a restrainer, and not of good things, but of evil things.
You know, the human heart is not neutral. It is from an early age going to make or to be developed in the way in which it's going to go. And there is the natural tendency of the human heart to lean into their own understanding. That's why Proverbs 3 commands us to trust in the Lord and lean not to thine own understanding. The psalmist, speaking of of even in our youth talk about the wicked being estranged from their mother's womb. They go forth as soon as they be born speaking lies. So if we know that inside the human heart, there is a natural proclivity to evil, to rebellion, to being against God, how important is it then to have an entity that is charged with a responsibility, a chief responsibility of policing the evildoers in its society, the very verses that you read? And at times, it's going to need force
to punish,
to do so.
Yeah.
I don't think that that is the only way in which a government extends its policing of evildoers. I know we look at our government, and sometimes I think about the Bernie Madoff incident, you know, the fellow that set up those funds, and he stole millions of dollars from individuals, right? That's one type of punishment. You look at someone that might be engaged in a level of driving in which is dangerous. There might be a ticket. One's going to prison, one's going to be a ticket. And then you might look at another one. Here's an individual that is engaged in some type of massive homicide. Well, that would be a third type of correction that the society would need.
Yeah. And speaking back to, you know, don't talk about politics at family events type things. But what you have here is a whole massive group of population, and everyone has their opinion on how much the force the government should use, how much depth of law the government should have, and there's so many different opinions on that.
You know, when you consider this, most people, even if there's not tremendous amount of moral training, most people will say thou shalt not steal. That theft is an evil. That you ought to, and they might even cite scriptures, but in a real sense, I'm trying to pull that just aside for a moment. They'll agree on certain portions of natural law.
Yeah.
Now, I would be inclined to say Romans chapter 2 and 3 that humanity has those natural laws because God has written it on their heart. But we'll save that thesis, that biblical truth for another day. The fact is, a society look at it and say, look, what's mine is mine. I have the right of possession.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you own a home, you have a car. Well, what prevents me from coming and making a copy of your keys and taking over your home, or making a copy of your keys and taking over your car and just driving off with it? You would be yelling. You'd be like, oh, it's my car. It's my house. You can't do this. You can't do this. Well, what is going to be the corrector there? So in one sense, you would say, well, I'm going to correct it. Or maybe you would wave a piece of paper at me and say, look, here's my mortgage title. Here is the deed to my car. This is legally mine. Well, that paper is not going to stop me physically, but what that paper represents will. And one thing that keeps a society at peace in one way, sometimes one with another, is the fact that you have a restrainer in the government. And I'm not suggesting that all governments are perfect. No, the contrary would be true. But they are a restrainer, and they are the one behind that paper that said this piece of land, this house, belongs to this person, and this car belongs to this. I'm always amazed, right, to think of all the numeric tracking that our society does. And I don't mean in some conspiratorial way, but you think, for instance, of your VIN number. You might have a white sedan, and there's 1,000 times 1,000 white sedans in this country. But the VIN number, why is it there? Well, in one sense, it's there. At least in one sense, it's there to uniquely identify a specific car as being yours. Where it was made, and what model it is, and what some of the features, all of that's encapsulated in that VIN number. But without that, it would be a very difficult thing. License plates would be another one as well. We often might look at that in a negative sense, but in a real sense, it's a way in which government is going to fulfill their biblical obligation of policing the evildoers. We don't want to live in a society like Lamech.
No.
You know, here's a fellow that lived in this city-state, Enos, that Cain established, Genesis chapter 4, and was he killed two men? And it seems as though there's no authority to push back against the evil he has done.
Yeah, what's going to keep him from killing a third?
It wasn't going to be those two men.
No.
They had no ability. He slew them. He was stronger. He was more mighty. Maybe he was more efficient in the use of a sword. And so as an ultimate end, he took their life. And now you come to Genesis chapter 9 and verse 6, and you have the responsibility of a society to use force in the retribution of those that have taken the life of the innocent.
Yeah, which would in fact bring about prevention of future evil.
Yes, you would hope and you would think, yes, absolutely. The chief responsibility the government has is to punish evildoers. They're a restrainer. A restrainer. That's the biblical phrase that is used in those verses you read just a moment ago.
Yeah. Another thing we could look at is not only are they there to restrain evil from going on, but they're also there to promote good. And promote good specifically to its inhabitants, to its citizens, to the people living there.
Isn't it interesting over in 1 Timothy chapter 2, we're told to be praying for all men, especially for kings, for those in authority. And the last part of that verse ends with this, that we might lead a quiet and peaceable life. That truly is an amazing thing to behold. I suppose there's been civilizations over the course of human history that did not always have the opportunity to have a quiet and peaceable life. Part of that, of course, I think is the message of the gospel. I think that's true. No one, the wicked, Isaiah said, are estranged from the peace of God. They don't know it. You and I as believers, we're to rest in the peace of God. But all to the broader essence of peace that's provided by the lack of conflict, a government should promote the good of its inhabitants. Man is created to labor, and therefore as he labors with his hands, it's a thing that the scripture says is good. And he has the opportunity, because he's labored with his hands, to do good with that. Ephesians talks about this. Let him still no more, but rather let him labor, working with his hand, thing which is good. Why? He may have to give to him that needeth. And so one thing government does is it deters the evildoers. It should promote good.
Yeah. And as a person within a government's able to live quiet and peacefully, they're going to have the opportunity to labor and to create, to success, to succeed.
I was reading about the Rhineland portion of Germany back in the, I guess, late 1600s, 1700s, and it was in that area that you have Waterloo, you have these major battles. And that particular area of Germany had just become so overrun. It was like a crossroads of the countries, as it were. And so you had all these massive battles. And the powers that be, primarily France, Napoleonic, Britain, some of those countries, they allowed for immigration of those folks out of the Rhineland area to go to other countries. And one of the driving forces was, because it was in that crossroads of conflict, that those people, it appealed to the hearts of these powerful countries, those people could not maintain a livelihood. They had known too much war, devastation, destruction, loss of property, and opening up the opportunity for them to experience in other lands a quiet and peaceable life. Some of those very descendants immigrated to the U.S. Through the means of these other countries as colonists. But that's a powerful essence. We have the opportunity to work and then do good. You think about marriage, and the oft result of marriage is family. You think about the commands that we have in scriptures that we're to do good. And a nation at one part plays a role in that, to promote good and wholesome behavior in a society. And there's a great need for it.
Yeah, there is.
You think of the trouble that just impacts any society. I read some time ago about the U.S. history. I forget the exact dates, but I think it was from the 1880s to maybe the early 1900s. You had 7 panics. The panics were financial downturns. We would call them recessions versus depression. You know, you've probably heard that old adage. A recession is when your neighbor loses his job, and a depression is when you lose yours. But you had 7 panics.
Right.
One of the big ones was the panic of 1894. You had all of these folks that had lost jobs and lost homes and various things of that end. They're looking for an opportunity. There's a need that exists.
Yeah.
And to have a government that promotes good, that can have an allowance in and among its society for charitable donations, to aid is a wonderful thing. Think about the American Red Cross.
Yeah.
That is not a governmental entity, but the allowance that our government has done to allow it to expand its means and the massive assistance it's done, not only to our own citizens, but to citizens around the world, is powerful.
Yeah. And we find in the Bible, we see Israel was a nation that did good to those that lived there within it. I mean, you think about the debt relief that they had. That was a system that had been established. You go in Exodus 21, it talks about it. You would go and you could have your debts paid, but then you'd labor for 6 years, and in the seventh year you'd be released. I guess it all depended on when you went into
debt,
how many years you worked. But there was a debt relief system. There was hunger relief. There was charity. There were different things there as well.
Yeah, I would note the distinction there was you still had to go out and labor.
Yes.
You know, that is a major biblical distinction. God has ordained work. But to the greater point, you know, had you, for various reasons, because the Lord said the poor you have with you always, will never eradicate debt, or I should say poverty. You look into that thence, and you had individuals that for a number of reasons may have been unable to care for their finances. It might have been their fault. It might have been an outside force, and they would lose their inheritance. They'd lose their plot of land. And here a friend, a distant relative could take and pay off that debt, and they would work to pay it off and then be able, after whatever the time frame was there that you mentioned, to return back and to enter in. And how great is that? That is so much superior, so greatly superior than the workhouse.
Oh, yeah.
And putting them in there is just like working and working, never being able to make. And it's so much better than the bankruptcy that will place upon people years and years of inability in certain ways. So, yes, Israel had provisions. God had created it in that government in the Old Testament for debt relief and for hunger relief too.
Yeah.
You know, because if you're struggling to pay debts, you might struggle for food as well. And, you know, over in Leviticus chapter 23, they were commanded not to harvest all the corners.
Right. Ruth's a good example of that.
Absolutely. But again, she did still have to go out.
Yeah.
And labor. They didn't collect it for her and give it to her. She had to go out and engage with some labor. But all of this is about government promoting something that is good. And any society that is a working society, it will be a society in many ways that is blessed. It will be prosperous in one end. And I should say with that working, I'm talking about honest working. And even to that, you might even want to add the entrepreneurial spirit that will come with it.
Third thing that we see there is that the government provides defense. That's another responsibility, to maintain peace, provide peace for the inhabitants that are there. And we can turn over to Isaiah chapter 9, verse 7. But peace from enemies and peace for life, as people live, that they can live in a peaceful nation. That's something that the government provides that citizens in and of themselves can't necessarily provide for themselves.
Hard to have any thriving society if they do not have a level of peace. Isaiah, of course, in chapter 9 talks about the prophetic coming of the virgin born. Well, that child that would be born, a government would be upon his shoulder. And one of the titular expressions that is used is he will be the Prince of Peace, the mighty God, the everlasting God, the Prince of Peace. And when you consider peace and how it relates to government, that's a powerful example. I think our government today invests in almost $900 billion.
With a B.
In defense. That is massive. I saw this week that NVIDIA, I think that's a foreign corporation, they do the cards, graphic cards for computers and stuff, and they just reached a threshold of being a $2 trillion company, something like that, or whatever it was. It was a very large number like that. And Apple and Microsoft, these are very large companies that are on the rise. Maybe it's a $1 trillion company. But you think about the fact that the valuation of an Apple company is what's being spent on defense in our society every year. Now, there is a conversation to be had, a long conversation, a practical conversation about that. But one thing that I can honestly say is the absence of conflict of invaders in our society allows the people, going back to our last point, to have a quiet and peaceable life.
Yeah.
And truly, when you look at the millennial kingdom of the Lord, as he'll sit and rule and reign on the throne of David, he will have bound all the adversaries.
Yeah.
For 1,000 years. There will be no war. We will have forgotten, as a world society in one sense, we will have forgotten what war was. You think about battles of 1,000 years ago.
Yeah, we don't remember that very well.
The Peloponnesian War, yes, that was something. Who was that again? And I know that was more than 1,000 years ago, but you consider those battles of antiquity. They seem so distant and so far off. Well, in the millennial kingdom, you're looking back 1,000 years. You're looking back, it's just something that, yeah, once happened. But generation after generation after generation after, and some generations are marked by warring conflict.
Oh, yeah.
The title, The Greatest Generation. And you think about World War II, you think about Pearl Harbor. I think about the generation preceding that one of the Great War, World War I, or maybe you think about the Baby Boomer generation and even flowing out to the battles in Vietnam, our own generation, those many that volunteered to fight after 9/11.
Yeah.
A lot of times that is a generational identifying mark to a society. And to think that there is a place, biblically and theologically, where war occurs between societies.
Yeah.
But one of the responsibilities is for a government to provide for the peace of its inhabitants. Not only for the duration of their life in one essence, but also a peace from those that would breach and destroy that way of life.
Yeah. The fourth responsibility we find is the government is to protect the oppressed,
yeah.
To protect from oppression. It's to pursue the success of its country. We talk about wealth, we talk about the safety. Basically, it's creating an environment for success for those that live in it.
Yeah, listen to these in Isaiah 10. Woe unto them that decree unrighteous decrees, that write grievousness which they have prescribed, to turn aside the needy from judgment, and to take away the right from the poor of the people, that the widows may be their prey, that they may be robbed and fatherless. And he goes down through that in Isaiah chapter 10, talking about some of the crimes. Habakkuk does a very similar thing in his writings as well. The appeal, the woes that are upon a society. Yes, government has a responsibility to pursue the success of its country. And it often does that by protecting those that could be oppressed.
Yeah.
And as it pursues the success of a country and that peace is maintained, there is a place for everyone among that society through diligence and certainly the pursuit of righteousness, because of their safety to expand, to have, if you will, sustenance, to have the opportunity to have land and homes and to have the opportunity to even fulfill some desires of their heart.
Yeah, Jeremiah chapter 29. Now this is under a Babylonian governmental system there, but this is what the people were able to do under that government. Jeremiah 29:5. The people are in captivity. The Israelites are in captivity, and they're saying, "Hey, how are we to conduct our lives?" Verse 5, build ye houses and dwell in them, plant gardens and eat the fruit of them. Take ye wives and beget sons and daughters and take wives for your sons and give your daughters to husbands. And it goes on so forth, and it is why and how are they able to pursue that success? How are they able to have homes? How are they able to have families? It's because the government is protecting from oppression. Yeah, and that's even for a captive people. They're brought in as captives and they're able to do those things.
Yeah, and have homes and vineyards and gardens, yes. And I even think of a free society that we have. You have the opportunity in some regards, through diligence and work and planning, and I would even add budgeting in there, that we have the opportunity to fulfill some of the desires that we'd like to in this life.
Sure.
Among those desires, I mean, you think of the idea of, man, you want to take a vacation. You want to spend time with your family. Having the opportunity of of labor and safety. Gives you the opportunity to plan and have the power to make decisions.
Yeah.
And probably the greatest decision is the decision or the freedom of decision that you can make some in your life. You choose what you want to do, whether you want to be a baker or a candlestick maker. You get to choose that in life. And that's a marvelous thing. Not every society has that, but it does seem to be one of the roles. It protects its citizenry and allows them through their own efforts, and I would say for believers being directed of the Spirit of God, to find some success in life.
Yeah. It's interesting. One of the things that we can do here, and I think about, we're in the United States, there's a lot of land, a lot of traveling that people do for vacationing. We're able to have the ability to travel in relative safety. And think about that. That's something that you couldn't just, Paul the Apostle couldn't do that.
Oh my.
Now, he was in a Roman government, but...
I recently had someone telling me how they took a motorcycle trip all the way to Alaska and back. Now, I don't know that I'd ever be up for that, but that is interesting. And yet, that never happens if there's oppression, bondage, you know, caste type environment.
This wasn't a necessary motorcycle trip.
No.
This was for
is
fun.
Is there a necessary motorcycle? I don't know. But it's an enjoyment,
yeah.
And that's what I'm speaking of, and that's a wondrous thing. And a government that protects from the oppression, it makes sure that there's a justice system, it makes sure that there is justice in society, a level playing field, if you can say it in that regard, letting each man and individual put their hands to the task and labor and work and being rewarded, it provides for an opportunity for its citizens.
Yeah, and I liked what you said there. The greatest freedom that we can enjoy is the freedom of decision.
Freedom of choice, yeah.
Yes.
I think finally, probably one of the last great roles of government is it points man to the greater authority. I know the heavens declare the glory of God, but it's interesting in Romans chapter 13, as he's talking about that minister of God government, and that government was established by the authority that God gave unto it. He kind of concludes in chapter 13 his response on government with this verse in verse 9. For this, thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not bear false witnesses, thou shalt not covet. The meaning of the commandment is this briefly, comprehended this saying, namely, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. It's interesting. He's basically concluding with the commandments that God gave on the holy mountain.
Yeah.
And of course, we're summarized by the Lord in the New Testament, two commandments. Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy might, with all thy strength, and thy neighbor as thyself. I believe it was Chesterton that said, man's inability to obey those two commandments has led to an unlimited number of commandments and decrees that he must then be governed by. Ultimately, the authority that a government has should point to the power and purpose of an almighty God. I think you see that a little bit in Daniel's ministry as well. In Daniel chapter 2, he's talking about these coming kingdoms. And he says in verse 37, speaking to Nebuchadnezzar, thou art a king of kings, for the God of heaven hath given thee a kingdom, power and strength and glory. And pointing to the Almighty King, Nebuchadnezzar's premier job was to remember who had established his kingdom. And of course, later on in the chapters, you'll recognize and remember that he failed to do that. And so God would humble him. I think the ultimate and greatest gain, not that I'm for state religion at all, but ultimately a government, if done well, should point people, individuals, should acknowledge the fact that every government, whether they like this phrase or not, is one government under God. It may be divisible. It may not have all the liberties that another one have, but every government is under God because he is the supreme authority.
As we conclude this week's episode, we're in Psalm 66, verse 7, and the scriptures say, he ruleth by his power forever. His eyes behold the nations. Let not the rebellious exalt themselves. Selah. And with that, we want to thank you once again for joining us, and we look forward to catching you next time. Goodbye for now.